Yonit Podcast, live from Austin, Texas. Total human optimization.
What's up? Here we are with another Yonit Podcast with none other than the founder of My Mad Methods, a man named Mark DeGrasse. Welcome to the Yonit Podcast, Mark.
Thank you.
So I got familiar with you way back quite a long time ago, before Onnit was selling any of this equipment, and I started messing around with it myself personally, and I started looking up videos for maces and clubs and things like that, and the best resource I found kept pointing me back to your site, and I started using it. I started learning techniques and, you know, techniques from all kinds of different people that you'd kind of gathered together, and it started to form the foundation of my training principles that ultimately led me to create a lot of the, you know, products that we have in Onnit, which then ultimately led me back to, finding you again and seeing what we could do together. So it's been kind of a full circle experience to have you here on the podcast and joining forces with Onnit.
Yeah. Very excited to be here. You know, that's how a lot of people find us, and a lot of people became contributors because, a lot of trainers don't realize that, they have a ton of good information and nobody knows about it, except for them maybe. And maybe they're not confident enough to put it out there, but, you know, they need to. So we try to be a resource that brought these people that had awesome ideas but just didn't know how to get it out there, and we just help them, you know, provide it.
So you've compiled basically a database, a resource of, you know, some of the pioneers in this field that you named the Mad Methods, and we'll get into that a little bit. But you just kind of compiled all the best voices in this field and just had them contribute their knowledge to create kind of a compendium of ideas, thoughts, workouts, exercises, things like that, right?
Yeah. Actually, when I first got started, I'd get the workouts from, you know, my trainer, and then I'd go online and I'd try to find...
Who's your trainer? That guy must be crazy.
Yeah, that's actually Marcus Martinez. He was my former business partner. He has a gym called M Body Strength in Orange County. And, at the time I was working as the CFO for a technology company, and I was working, 70, 80 hours a week, and I got really out of shape for a while, and then I wanted to get back.
And when Mark says he works 70, 80 hours a week, he actually really is. Like, a lot of people say that and they are exaggerating, but I know your schedule and I know that you actually do work that. So,
It's fun. It's still, actually, it hasn't changed at all.
Well, and you just added some babies to it.
Yeah,
that helps. That helps.
6 months and 16 months.
Yeah, know? Perfect.
Yeah. So I sleep a ton.
Yeah.
What happened was I got out of shape. I wanted to get back in shape. Had zero time for the gym. And on top of that, the conventional kind of bodybuilding techniques, isolation exercises, that kind of stuff wasn't going to work because I had 20 minutes in my living room.
And was that what you had been doing previously?
Yeah, for a few years, I was actually, I played water polo in high school and college, and so at that time, I was working out 6 hours a day. You know, you could eat whatever you want, you're burning 10,000 calories, you know, it's great. Sorry, except for the 6 hours working out. After I graduated college and got a full-time job, and, you know, it's that goes away, and you don't have any time, and your diet might not change, and that's what happened to me, where I got out of shape for maybe 5 years, and then I looked at, I think it was a picture from the beach or something, and I found, I was like, oh, my God, I don't look like a water polo player anymore. And so I talked to...
What does that look like? Kind of like a swimmer, right?
Yeah, kind of like a swimmer, except, I don't know, zero body fat. I think when I graduated, I was like 150 or something.
Whoa.
And I'm 6'1", so that's pretty lean.
Yeah.
And, at the time, I was probably up to 195 or 200 when I started realizing, like, hey, you know,
I'm fat.
Gotta do something. Yeah. I was skinny fat, you know.
That's the worst.
Because it's like, hey, people say I look okay. And I'm like, yeah, I look okay. And then you start realizing, like, okay, but I'm weak and I get tired walking uphill and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not only, I don't look like I want to look, but I also don't feel good. So, what I did was business partner Marcus Martinez, I was working with at that company, and he had started doing kettlebells, and so I'm like, okay, yeah, let me try it out.
What year was this?
This was 2005, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2005, 2006, somewhere around there. And so basically, I just started doing 15 minute workouts, maybe 4 or 5 days a week. And within a month, I had lost 10, 15 pounds, you know, this combined with the diet. And then that's all I needed. You know, even to this day, I only do 30 to 40 minute workouts about four times a week, you know, and then I have a, you know, relatively healthy diet, and you know, it's all about efficiency for me.
Yeah.
And that's where the MAD methods or the unconventional training comes in, is it's about efficiency. It's not, you know, you don't have to do 6 hours of working out to be functional and be healthy. You just need to use the right implements and the right techniques.
Yep. So then you took it from kettlebells, and then did you and your trainer just start exploring other things and just trying stuff on, seeing what worked? How did you progress into the full kind of gamut of everything that, you know, gets us fired up now?
What I found was there was a bunch of different techniques out there, or implements. You know, the implements, you know, are the sandbags, the kettlebells, the mace bells, you know, the individual items. And usually they qualify as something that's affordable and you could use within a small amount of space, and you could get a good workout efficiently. So that's kind of how I qualified the implements. But what we found was the workouts were pretty similar, and the techniques were somewhat similar in terms of the functional movements. Mm-hmm. And so, but there's no real category for it. So at the time, I had read a few books about unconventional warfare. The Accidental Gorilla, Generation Kill, a few different books like that. Mm-hmm. And what I found was that the concept of unconventional warfare, which is basically saying, okay, convention is gone, we need to reinvent something that's more efficient for this situation, I felt really applied to what these implements were capable of. So you're applying this efficiency to you know, a kind of new environment that has new requirements. So now I think, so that's how the unconventional training category kind of came about. I kind of lumped it all together.
I like that. You've kind of positioned the unconventional training as, you know, kind of the modification, the guerrilla warfare, and then the old style training is kind of like, I see just fixed British people in line saying,
yeah, well,
fire, and then kneeling, and then loading, and
well,
firing
it's even,
again.
It's even more
massive casualties.
Well, and that's actually the whole concept of guerrilla warfare really came from the 90s. It's after the Soviet Union fell, and this whole conventional warfare and giant armies going head to head, it doesn't happen anymore. You have small skirmishes, you have, you know, tough environments that you have to adapt to, and really I see the implements as being able to adapt to the new qualification that people are looking for, which is, you know, I want to look good, but I'm more worried about being functional. I want to, you know, be 45 and still be able to throw my kids up in the air or keep up, you know, playing football on the weekends or whatever.
And one of those things that kind of led me into it is I've been friends with a lot of MMA fighters, and they obviously have to perform at peak functionality no matter what. I mean, those guys are not concerned with what their body looks like. They're concerned about what their body can do. And the way that they were training was vastly different than the, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger encyclopedia bodybuilding style that I had been doing before, which is good at putting on mass, but I could not keep up with these workouts that, you know, some of my fighter friends were doing, you know, kettlebells, the ropes, all these different implements. And so I really got kind of excited about improving the functionality there. And so you've really seen that adapt not only in MMA now, though, but just across all sports. I mean, all athletes are now implementing these, along with, you know, sometimes they still combine them. I mean, you're not going to get a football player to stop doing squats, but, you know, they're still combining them with a lot of their other traditional exercises, which is pretty cool to see.
Well, it goes beyond just the sports, too. It's, you know, a lot of people that we work with are soldiers, firefighters, law enforcement, people who are doing physical, maybe dangerous activities on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's more than just about, hey, well, I mean, it's important that they're doing it so they could stay alive, maybe in any given situation. But also, you know, if you have an injury, you know, say an overuse injury, and you're 40, you know, you just may have knocked 15 years off of your career. You're not going to be a soldier anymore. You're not going to be a firefighter anymore. You can't do these things that, you know, you worked your life doing.
Or if you have an injury and you like doing stuff, you're not 15 years off your fun. You know, let's say you like playing golf or tennis or basketball or whatever. You get that injury. Sorry.
Well, exactly. You know,
that's the end of that.
I trained my dad, and he's 56 years old, and he loves doing kettlebells. Like, and before, he had not done any kind of training like that. And what he found was like, hey, you know, now I finally have some time. Kids are out of the house, and, you know, I'm feeling like crap. My back hurts, and my knee hurts, and all these different things hurt because, you know, typical training doesn't address the need for joint mobility and longevity, really. Mm-hmm. And what these, you know, implements provide is that longevity. And, you know, since they're so functional, you could progress with them and you could learn and, you know, really build up your capabilities.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Orlando, you've kind of made a little bit of this journey alongside.
I did a little bit of something.
Yeah, you started adapting some of these unconventional methods. What have you thought since, you know, kind of being introduced to the Onnit stuff and, of course, recently to Mark, but, yeah. You know, that kind of unified concept?
I mean, for me personally, I can definitely tell a difference. I mean, I've always, like, played a lot of, like, co-ed team sports and stuff like that. And I've always
he's kind of that dodgeball, kickball.
Yeah, I'm kind of that guy.
Soccer.
I'm kind of that guy.
Ultimate frisbee.
But, you know, yeah. I always felt like I was good out there. But it wasn't until I started training here, like a real trainer, like figure out what I'm doing, that I really noticed a difference where I could, like, more explosiveness, like being able to, you know, last longer, run for longer periods of time. And I think a big part of it was, you know, I've always exercised. I've never not, you know, gone through a period in my life where I just stopped exercise altogether, but I'd always just plateaued and never got anywhere past that. And I always thought, well, that must be the best that I can do. And I was wrong.
It's the best that you could do with the methods that you had available.
With the methods I had available and the tools I had available too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, coming here, it really, you know, put a cap on that notion and just made me be able to succeed.
Sure. And even for myself, I know that, you know, I have different measuring sticks. One of them is there's this playground out in Santa Monica out on the beach, which is just a bunch of bars and ropes and stuff like that. And I'd go there. I go there every, you know, few months usually because I'm always out in LA doing a podcast or something like that. And I've done that consistently my whole life. And there's certain things that I've never been able to do. Like there's these big bar jumps where you swing on the bar and they're spaced out maybe 8 feet apart or something like that. And you got to swing from one to the other and grab it. Parallel ropes, climbing that stuff. And, you know, I think with all the mace bell training, with all the other training that I've done, I couldn't even come close to doing that stuff before. And then I got out there recently and I'm doing it. You know, I'm keeping up. And it's just... And I was, you know, there was periods where I was bigger. I mean, I was up to 205, you know, 210 at one point, just looking like my neck was, you know, a pyramid. And, but I couldn't do any of that stuff. You know, I could maybe climb one rope, but, you know, parallel ropes or doing all these other kind of rings and things like that, not a chance.
Well, I think that's the cool thing about the methods is that, you know, they're transferable. It's not, you know, you weren't climbing ropes and doing swinging right. things and that made you better at that stuff. You were actually just doing an implement that was functional and increased your grip strength, increased your, you know, rotational explosiveness and, you yep. know, all these different elements that then transferred into this functional application of going to a playground.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's efficient and, you know, it's very, you know, it's progressive. So you built onto that and now you can do this stuff. And
mm-hmm.
if you just keep on the, you know, kind of a systematic approach to it, then you'll get even better results and
yeah.
you know, keep on increasing.
So you have I did a workout with you and I enjoyed your kind of process. You have a timed methodology that you like to kind of push, which is like 30 seconds of one thing, 30 seconds of another, and then rest. Go into kind of what your theory on that, because it's almost a variation on some kind of Tabata type of training.
It is. It's you know, an interval training type.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, you know, I did it because I had a gym and I was running a lot of boot camps. And, you know, in a boot camp, you have a bunch of different levels. You have people who are beginning, people who are advanced, all that kind of stuff. And you can't say everybody do 10 reps. You
yeah.
know, it doesn't work like that. You know, you have to say 30 seconds and everybody does as many as they can do. You can encourage them to do a certain amount of reps, but, you know, it just it's functional. It says, you know, do your best in 30 seconds. So, you know, combining the interval training, which is, you know, just good in terms of conditioning, and then putting these workouts online, it allows you to kind of do your best without having to restrict the workout or restrict somebody who's more advanced. Because mm-hmm. if you're more advanced, I'd just say, hey, go faster or grab a heavier weight and you won't be able to do so many reps in the 30-second period.
Sure.
So I'll still use, you know, depending on the objective, because if you're saying, okay, we're doing a strength workout, you can't say do strength workout, you know, do a strength movement for 30 seconds. You would say, hey, grab a heavy weight and do 5 reps of a weight that you could only do a maximum of, say, 8 reps.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's your strength training. So it's, you know, while we use the time sets, it's all about, you know, the situation,
what your goals are,
yeah, who's involved, all that kind of stuff. So it's all addressing, you know, the situation.
Yeah.
Which goes back to the unconventional, you know, warfare and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. So when you're setting up your own fitness, you like to do kind of, you like to set out like a regimen, right? Set out kind of a plan. You're going through, you're saying you're doing one that you had written some years back, and you just stick to it. You just follow along with the kind of plan that you'd put in place, right?
Yeah. What happens, you know, a lot of times, especially with trainers and people who have trained for a while, is they'll say, hey, I could do all these kettlebell movements, so I'm just going to freestyle it, you know. And what happens when you do that is you still lean towards exercises that
you like
at.
And you're good at.
Hey, I'm good at this one, so.
Hey, stop telling me what I'm doing right now.
Nobody actually likes squats.
Yeah. Today I'm going to do this one that I kind of look awesome doing, you know, and that's pretty common. You know, happens with conventional gyms too. The guy that's good at bench press is probably not going to do bent over rows a ton because he's good at bench press. Yeah. So when you program it out, and whether you take somebody else's program or you write your own, you're still going to follow it, you know, or you're going to do better because you follow it. You know, for me, it's like, oh God, I hate Turkish get-ups. Like, they're just terrible.
Yeah, I hate them too.
They hurt, you know, no matter how many reps or time periods you do, it's still going to suck. And so I, you know, unless I program it in there and say, hey, I need a core set here, or I need a full body set,
yeah,
you know, I'm not going to do that just in the gym. Like, hey, I could do something I like, or I could do something I really hate. You're just not going to do that. So if you have a program, it keeps it, you know, it keeps you accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And then also you'll progress. So what I usually do when I have like a 4-week workout program is the first week we'll have an easier variation. Like I might go from, you know, day one is a half get up. You know, you're just doing halfway up,
yep,
go back down. Then week two is maybe 3/4 get up. And then week 3 and 4, you're onto your full get up and you progress to this point. And then you take a week off and then you go into some other thing. But, you know, the whole workout plan mentality is about progression and then systemization of, you know, that progression.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. I have an idea to do something we haven't done here on a podcast. We're going to create a lightning round here. And here's how this game is going to work, Mark. This game's going to work. I'm going to name out a unconventional training piece of equipment, and you're going to say very briefly what you feel the unique attributes and strengths of that piece of equipment are.
Okay.
So we'll start easy. Maybe not. Maybe it's hard. I don't know. Kettlebells.
Let's see. Full body, explosiveness, strength, conditioning, extreme versatility, and the ability to use a variety of techniques effectively.
Yeah, I think the versatility of kettlebells makes it hard to kind of categorize.
It does. I mean, that's what makes it so popular.
Right.
You know, as long as you're not a person who likes to restrict it and, you know, you could only do these 8 drills and 8 drills is all you could do with this and anything else is stupid. You know, kettlebells free it up to, hey, just mess around. I mean, if you think about the history of it, it came as a like a weight to hold down tents or something. And these, you know, shippers or whoever was using it was throwing them around. And that's how kettlebell training started.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole concept of it is, you know, just because it's practical.
Right. Indian clubs, the light ones.
Rotational mobility, joint longevity, and, you know, coordination.
Yeah. For those of you who haven't been familiarized with those yet, Onnit's working on coming out with some of those, but they're much lighter than the clubs that we have, and great for kind of warming up, prehab, rehab, exactly.
Yeah, we kind of categorize the clubs into two different groups. We have heavy clubs, which is basically 5 pounds to 45 pounds or whatever you have, and then we have Indian clubs, which Indian clubs traditionally are 1 or 2 pounds, and you're just using it for swinging exercises that are, you know, good for your, you know, wrist, shoulder girdle, elbow. You know, it's really for rehab and then also prehab or whatever you want to call it to prevent injuries that would come from overuse or anything like that.
Yeah. Heavy clubs,
again, rotational strength, conditioning, and, you know, I'd say mobility to a certain extent because you are still using that swinging movement that you would use with an Indian club.
Mm-hmm. Mace,
you know, again, rotational strength. The cool thing with the mace is that the momentum that you generate since the ball is so far from, you know, where your hands are, mm-hmm, allows you to, you know, really engage your core. So I guess I would say core strength and then shoulder mobility and strength.
Yep. Sandbag.
Sandbag, you know, is extremely functional, strength-oriented, explosive, and really fun if you know what you're doing. You know, a lot of people have never tried sandbags, and at first it's floppy and it's uncomfortable and, mm-hmm, you're not going to be able to get it. But, you know, in terms, you know, if you think about what's functional, you know, being able to pick up somebody and put them on your shoulder is pretty freaking functional. So, yeah, I'd say it's probably the most functional.
Yeah. I mean, how many times do I put you on my shoulders, Orlando?
All the time.
When we go to the park and we go to the fair. Yeah.
Yeah. So the, but you know, sandbags are awesome. You just have to know how to use them and, you know, get beyond the fact that it's like a bag of sand, you know.
Right.
I had one guy I know, I used to make fun of me. He was like, oh, you're going to work out with a bag of sand? Yeah. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. But that's what functionality is all about. It's not working with things that are, you know, look like a barbell all the time.
Yeah. You know, a fixed weight, you know, how many times you go to lift up something and it's totally fixed in place and you know exactly where the weight is located and, you know, that
Never.
Kind of stuff.
Never. The only time I actually lift anything up anymore is when I get a little tipsy and I try to do dirty dancing moves with my girlfriend. Like, nobody puts baby in the corner. Come here. And it's definitely not like lifting a strict military press with dumbbells or a barbell.
It's totally. You know? Well, what you
the
have
weight is moving all around. Your hands are in different positions. You got to get your balance right. You got to get everything
thing is, it's
organized.
With anything you're doing repetitions of, you get in a flow and you get efficient at the flow. And then, you know, the 10th rep might actually be easier than the 5th rep or something like that. With sandbags, mm-hmm. it's like you hit a reset button every time you set the thing down because the weight shifts and then you have to readjust when you lift it the next time and then you set it down and then readjust again and set it down. You know, it's horrible because it's just so floppy and, you know, it just shifts so much.
Yeah. Bulgarian bag, speaking of which.
You know, again, rotational kind of wrestler strength, you know, and core strength again. It's actually, you know, in terms of functionality, it's kind of similar to the mace bell, you mm-hmm. know, in terms of the rotational movement. And I would say it's more similar to a mace bell than it is to a sandbag because a Bulgarian bag is actually, it's really tight, you know, it's all packed in there. You have the handles, you know, we did an article about it and it turns out that the Bulgarian bag came from a strongman contest that they had in Bulgaria where they lifted up a lamb on their shoulders. And that's why, and the ends of the Bulgarian bag, they're kind of pointy because they're...
I mean, who doesn't have that contest, right? I mean, how many times have I been in a lamb lifting contest?
Yeah, like you know, you
got to
put it on your shoulders and hike up a hill.
We have our Christmas lamb lifting contest and then our springtime lamb lifting contest.
Hey, let's go out and lift a lamb.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, we actually, in the article, we actually have pictures of the guy carrying the lamb. It's like strongman contest. It's like, okay, that's weird.
And the lamb, is the lamb alive or is the lamb dead?
I think it's alive.
Yeah, just chilling.
So you have to like knock it out first. And then I don't know.
There's no actual lambs, no lambs harmed in the making of this podcast.
Strongman. Then they throw it as high up in the air as they can, like a cage. You know?
Don't do that at home. But get a Bulgarian bag. Do not use actual lambs in unconventional training.
Well, what's funny is
those methods are too mad.
Too mad.
All we need is PETA after
this. But you'll see, you know, and again, you know, similar to the mace bell, is they actually do slamming exercises against
with lambs?
With lambs.
Oh, my God. How rude.
The lamb surrogate, also called a Bulgarian bag.
They're tenderizing their poor lamb.
The lamb. But, yeah, I mean, they're made out of, you know, soft leather. And
lambskin?
Lambskin. No, I don't think they use lambskin. Too expensive for lambskin.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're high quality, you know, and you won't really be able to purchase a bad one because the company that creates them has tons of patents on every single aspect of them. So you are getting them from one place and they're going to be well made and, you know, you'll have a system.
Right on.
With it, so.
Now, suspension training, and I want to talk about kind of what the modification that we're going to be, you know, kind of pushing, which I think is an improvement, especially for grip strength on a lot of this traditional suspension training.
You know, the suspension training is awesome because it kind of ups your calisthenics or your body weight training because it adds the, you know, another element to it. And with the, what you'll typically see is most things are just a derivative of the gym rings, you know, used in the Olympics forever. Mm-hmm. And there's a million exercises, even though most people can't do any of them because you have to be
there's
a
million exercises.
But you can't do
if
one.
You're one of 11 people in the world
and you weigh 95 pounds.
Yeah.
But, you know, the TRX, you know, any of the kind of suspension cable systems that you hang off of something, they're all good because you could do tons of stuff with them and basic variations of your calisthenics. You know, what we did today, you know, we shot the, we did the same type of suspension exercises, but instead of using a TRX-like system or gym rings, we used a heavy rope.
Yep.
So just like you see the battling rope, we actually just took a 6 foot length and just hung it off a bar. And what that did was take the whole workout to another level because you're now incorporating a bunch of grip strength, grip, forearm, and really it's a little bit more awkward than having a set ring or something in your hand. So you got to grip it harder, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of fighters or anybody who's going to be grabbing somebody's wrist or anything like that. It's much more functional.
Yeah. Well, in most sports, I mean, having a strong grip is going to be an ally in almost, except for soccer, where they don't let you use your hands. Yeah. Such a strange sport.
When you fall on the ground.
Like, it's so much more efficient if I just grab the ball sometimes and bouncing it off my face. But
too easy.
What else have I missed here? What else are we missing?
There's sledgehammer. We have a category we call odd objects. And uh-huh. what fits into that is everything else. So
big stones,
atlas stones, you know, anything, a log. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, and usually you use these methods when you're, say you do a hike or something and you're like, hey, you know, I really want to incorporate some upper body into my hike. So you might grab a log or you might grab a rock and do some presses or whatever. The good thing about those things is that they're super awkward and, you know, they're hard to grab. You're never going to have practiced it before because the shape is always going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, super functional as well. I'm thinking, battle ropes. That's what we missed.
Yep.
Another main category is battle ropes.
Yep.
You know, which is insanely functional and way harder than they look. You know, if anybody who's tried them before, it's like, oh, you're just making little waves with them. And it's like, yeah, technically. But the amount of, you know, core strength, conditioning, you know, grip, everything mm-hmm. you're engaging and you're nonstop.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, for that peak cardio before battle ropes, everything was leg based, you know, for me, really. I guess you could kind of do some, unless you had like a trainer and you're doing some mitt work or some heavy bag work, you know, punching work.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only other thing that can get that kind of cardio without using heavy, you know, leg training to do it. And I think one of the cool things about the battle ropes is you can get to that kind of max peak heart rate level, the low impact, and using your upper body in case your lower body's gassed or too sore or something like that. So you can keep these levels of conditioning going highly.
On top of that, if you actually look, because there's the standard kind of tsunami type stuff, but if you look at guys like Aaron Guyette and Corey Beasley at Innovative Results, mm-hmm. You know, they learned from John Brookfield, who basically came up with the whole concept of battling ropes.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, they do tons of stuff, rotational stuff. You know, they even have an exercise that basically simulates throwing a hook punch and sending a wave down and trying to hit the end of the rope each time. I mean, and then they have pulling exercises where you're actually wrapping around a fixed point and pulling using your whole body from a plank position. I mean, they're super versatile and, you know, really hard. So
yeah.
If you want something that's, you know, going to gas you out as quickly as possible, it's going to be something like battle ropes.
Right on. So if people are sitting around, let's talk about a few different scenarios. Let's say, you know, you're not really working out much. You have a little gym membership. What do you think is a good starting point for them to get into unconventional training?
I would say, you know, you could go out and buy a kettlebell. You know, kettlebells mm-hmm. have the, you know, tons of resources, you know, like mymedmethods.com. small plug. you know, tons of stuff online. There's tons of systems, DVDs, all that. There's a lot of resources for it. But I think if you really, you know, want to get serious about it, you have to go see a trainer. You know, you need to see a professional.
And where do you find an unconventional trainer that is not a indoctrinated in the midst of CrossFit?
You know, I'm not going to say a thing about CrossFit kettlebell trainers, but, you know, typical CrossFits only do, you know, and there are CrossFits that have like a RKC instructor, you know, there's IKFF, you know, there's big organizations that have really good qualifications. And in order to get their certification, you're going to have to work for it. And, You know, you want to find somebody from one of the big organizations.
Find a certified kettlebell trainer.
Yes, somebody who's not, you know, you could. The thing about CrossFit is they go kind of shallow into some of the aspects of unconventional training. And so, you know, a lot of people only know maybe the American swing or a couple.
And that the American swing, which you'll see, which is very popular in CrossFit, is the swing that goes all the way up.
Yeah, it's a two. It's basically
a two-handed swing.
Yeah, it's like a two-hand swing. And then you end up with the bell directly over your head.
And you can't poke your head through. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not a fan of it just because I think it's dangerous in large group settings. And if you mess up, it's going to flop over and hurt your arms or land on your head or something. But, you know, that's my opinion. Some people really like it. But the you want to find somebody who's really has a good grasp of the swing, the clean exercise, the snatch, high pull.
It
just
seems to me that the clean and the snatch are the, you know, the clean and press and snatch are the most technical of those exercises for sure. You know, there's a lot of things that you can do with a kettlebell, like a thruster. You know, like pretty self-explanatory. You know, you go down and do a squat and then you push it up, and you know, a lot of things like that you can do with the kettlebell without the technical aspects. But to get the, you know, to get the snatch particularly, you know, to get that right, definitely useful to get a little instruction from someone.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could use a kettlebell as a dumbbell if you really wanted to, or you could use it as a medicine ball, you know, doing certain exercises that are just using it as a fixed weight. But, you know, the cool thing about kettlebells is you could use it as simply as that, but you can progress this level of being able to do, like, your Gear Voice Sport or Kettlebell Sport people that are doing, you know, hundreds of reps in 10 minutes with 106 pounds or more, you know. There's so many different levels of it, and you can progress, which makes it more interesting and makes you more likely to keep with it for a longer period of time, because you can see, here's where I can get. You're never going to get like, man, when I first started I did this barbell curl really bad and now I do it good, you know. There's no progression. Sure. There, it's you just add weight, you know. Sure. That's your progression. So, you know, with kettlebells, it's not just about the weight. It's about the technique and, you know, really being able to become an expert. So you need to find somebody who's done that and has a firm grasp of, you know, the basics, the clean, the swing, the snatch, and can teach you, you know, those ballistic elements that really require some technique.
And if you can't find anybody in your area, we do have some cool instructionals up and on it. I know there's some instruction at My Mad Methods as well. Not all of us will have that access. But, yeah, if you can get someone who's good to kind of show you the ropes, it makes a big difference. I remember, you know, just having, you know, having access to Ken Blackburn. Obviously, he's the head trainer for IKFF. Going over some little things on some of these movements made a huge difference as far as the amount of output I could do, as far as saving your hands and your grip. And, you know, some of the power elements were still always there, but as far as being able to do it sustainably for a while, once you get the form down, you can make dramatic improvements.
Oh, yeah. And then all the kettlebell stuff, especially the extreme technical kettlebell stuff, will apply to a lot of the other methods. So if you could do a clean in with a kettlebell, well, you could do a sandbag clean. Easy. You know, you'll have some rotational strength for your mace belt training or your Bulgarian bags or all that kind of stuff. So it's transferable to the other methods. And then the technique that you get out of it will also help with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Well, man, it's been a pleasure having you out. We shot a ton of stuff today. So we'll have a bunch of videos coming out and we'll just keep this thing rolling. Everybody, you know, I know we've made the announcement already, but it's things are just going to keep getting solidified on it. And My Mad Methods, we've joined forces. Really, they exemplify, you know, everything that we've sought after in our fitness line. And we're going to be working with them to help complete, flesh out our own line. And, you know, lean on them for information from the best people in the world who are doing this. And, you know, I see no reason why, you know, if we're not there already, you know, we can become the real kind of leaders, both in information and products in this space. So I'm looking forward to taking that journey with you, my brother.
Yeah. Yeah. We're very, very excited about it. You know, you guys have a certain mindset that, you know, require, or what we needed was somebody with an open mindset that, you know, could take in these methods and really take it to the next level in terms of the equipment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's you guys. It's pretty obvious when you look at your gear and what you're trying to do.
Right on, man. Well, till next time, on it, peeps. Much love. Orlando, hop on my shoulders. Let's get out of this bitch. Later.